Small business owners, this one's for you. Chase for Business and iHeart bring you a new podcast series called The Unshakeables. This one-of-a-kind series will shine the spotlight on small business owners like you who faced a do-or-die moment that ultimately made their business what it is today. Learn more at chase.com/business/podcast. Chase, make more of what's yours. Chase mobile app is available for select mobile devices. Message and data rates may apply. JPMorgan Chase Bank, N.A. member FDIC. Copyright 2024, JPMorgan Chase & Co.
The most innovative companies are going further with T-Mobile for Business. The PGA of America is helping lower scores and elevate fan experiences with AI coaching tools and 5G-connected cameras. AAA is getting more drivers back on the road fast with location telematics. And the Las Vegas Grand Prix is powering race day operations with 5G connectivity, giving fans an experience at the speed they deserve. This is accelerating innovation with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
Pushkin.
The Germans used to do this. They would charge like $10,000 for horsepower. You know, to get the big engine, you'd have to spend sometimes double the price of the car. And it was just, come on, man. Americans don't do that. Like, you check a box on your Chevy Nova and you get the big engine. And it's $50. And to me, that seems totally un-American.
Oh, yeah, my granddad used to tell me about those days.
They predate me. But I still think that value is a really big part of the American vehicle equation.
John Volker is the founding editor of a hybrid and electric car website, Green Car Reports. He's also a frequent contributor to Car and Driver. John has agreed to help me sort the wheat from the chaff when it comes to electric vehicles, and his thoughts on EVs are as well informed as they come. On this special season of Car Show, we're putting cars in four brackets to the test. This week, it's EVs. At the end of our series of highly subjective tests and debates, we will crown a winner. The greatest award in the history of this business, the Car Show Car of the Year. I'm your host, Eddie Alterman. The four cars in our EV bracket are as follows. The 580 horsepower, 300 miles of range, Ford F-150 Lightning, starting at $54,000 and escalating steeply from there. Then there's the BMW i4, specifically in the 536 horsepower, $68,000 M50 high-performance trim, with an EPA range rating of 227 miles. Third up, the Hyundai Ioniq 5, starting at $43,000 and giving up to 320 horsepower or 303 miles of EPA-rated range. Finally, and this one's less expensive than you'd guess from looking at it, the $63,000 Cadillac Lyriq, with its 340 horsepower and 312 miles of range in single-motor guise. And at the end of the episode, we'll take you for a drive in the winter. So stay tuned.
Okay, let's accelerate quickly. No sound.
But first, a definition of terms that are important for EV owners and even would-be EV owners.
Well, probably the first one is kilowatt hours. A kilowatt hour is just a measure of energy. And you can say a gallon of gasoline has roughly 30 kilowatt hours of energy in it. The car battery in an electric car, a modern one, not a high-end one, but a modern electric car, a VW ID4 or one of the ones from Hyundai or Kia, etc., has 60 to 70 kilowatt hours of energy. And my rule of thumb has always been that on average, And of course, this depends on how you drive, how fast you drive, what the temperature is, and so forth. You're looking at about 3 miles of range per kilowatt hour, plus or minus. So you may see this statistic in the brochure or online that says, okay, this car has 65 kilowatt hours of usable energy in its battery. Well, what does that mean? Basically, multiply by three, and you get to that car having 200 or more miles of range. So the next one is EPA range. Like gasoline cars, the EPA has effectively an efficiency rating for these cars, and it's the same metrics as a gasoline car. It's roughly half and half urban and highway. Now, on an electric car, because they're so much more efficient, highway miles takes a bigger hit on range because you're pushing air aside. So driving around town, the range is much higher, the EPA range. Driving on the highways, if you do nothing but 75 miles an hour on the highway for the whole battery, you won't get that range. The EPA range is an average.
And so, you know, a conventional internal combustion car is going to get better highway mileage than it does in the city. A battery electric will get better mileage in the city than it does on the highway.
Well, and what I like to point out is that part of it with a gasoline car is that they're enormously inefficient. So they waste about 3/4 of all that energy in your gasoline. If you took the energy in a 12-gallon tank of gasoline, which is about average, and put it in an electric car, because battery cars are so much more efficient, you'd have over 1,000 miles of range. You get 300 in that gas car because 75% of that energy gets wasted as heat or noise.
Gotcha. And let's talk about charging for a second. The new sort of buzzword is 800-volt architecture. What does an 800-volt architecture mean, and why is it important?
In one sentence, it means that your battery pack can charge at twice the voltage of the 400-volt architecture that's been standard pretty much for all high-voltage packs since the first Toyota Prius, plus or minus. So you get reduced charging time, in part because of reduced internal resistance. However, the reason that not everybody has done this is because it was a brand new concept 5 years ago. There isn't the parts infrastructure out there that automakers can go to and say, I need an electric air conditioner and so on. And you have to have more powerful charging stations to take advantage of that. So it's really the kilowatt rate that is the speed at which you can charge that shoppers, buyers should pay attention to.
So what's sort of the state of art charging time? Like, how long should it take to get from 20% charge to 80 or 90% charge? Like, what are the fastest charging cars doing on the hottest rigs?
Well, we have the Porsche Taycan and then a couple of new EVs from Hyundai and Kia and Genesis. And note to shoppers, you will see car makers quote times for 10 to 80% or 15 to 80%. They are under optimal circumstances, the right temperature, a battery pack that's already warmed up so it can take energy and so on. But to get from 10 to 80% of a pack, which may be as much as 200 more miles, it could be as little as 18 minutes as compared to, say, half an hour or 40 minutes for 150 kilowatt charging, maybe even more, depending on, again, lots of asterisks.
Gotcha. Well, let's move into the cars themselves now.
That's the short version of a 188-slide presentation.
Well, we'll do that later. That'll be a Detours episode.
The first EV we're going to discuss is the electrified version of the Ford F-150 full-size pickup truck.
So let's start with the biggie. The biggest news probably in the category since the Tesla Model S, and that is the Ford F-150 Lightning. Now, the Ford F-150, the truck, is sort of a car company unto itself. They sell more of these things than any other vehicle in the U.S. And so there's room within the F-150 universe for things like a Raptor, for things like a Lightning, because there's no real average F-150 buyer. And so I found it sort of fascinating brand management that they decided to go into a category that's historically, you know, the average American truck buyers historically a little hostile to EVs, and they like towing capability and they like big V8s and stuff like that. So I found it really interesting to see Ford make this move. And what happened was they're getting new sorts of buyers. They're getting a lot of women buyers. They're really over-indexing on women buyers because a lot of women buyers claim that they hate gas stations. They feel vulnerable there. And so they'd rather charge this thing at home. So really, really interesting vehicle. What's your take on the F-150 Lightning?
I think it's fascinating that Ford decided to go that way after introducing their first real EV, the Mustang Mach-E. They dived right into their crown jewel line. The F-Series line makes Ford a prodigious amount of money, and they make a million-ish of them every year. The fact that they were able to make an F-150 that is both a believable F-150 truck, and if I heard one thing in the launch over and over, it was, it can't be weird. They've made a truck that isn't weird. You look at it and you go, yep, that's an F-150. But it has an electric powertrain. It has range that is real and reasonable for the way Americans use. They have towing capability. But most important, it is in many ways a better F-150 than anything else in the line. It has the, is it called the Power Front Mega Trunk? I forget. They have some brand name for this gigantic.
Let's call it the frunk.
Actually, I avoid using the F word, but as you wish. But this, you know, open the hood and there's this gigantic space that's lockable. So you can put tools in it that you can't leave in the bed. And it has all independent suspension, so it rides far better than any other F-150. And people don't look at you weird because it's not a weird truck. And there are ancillaries to being a large battery pack on wheels, like you can power your house. Again, a lot of asterisks there. But Ford, I think, was really surprised how much people took to this notion of, oh, if I have an EV, I actually have backup energy as a swap out for my Honda generator. And I know some of you in Michigan have told me fairly frequently that the power goes off there. I have the same problem up the mountain in the Catskills. And so that's a material benefit of an EV that doesn't come from a gasoline vehicle. So they have not only made an F-150 that is electric, believable, and desirable, they have gotten a bucket load of people buying them. And the new buyers, some of their existing buyers, but fleets, because the lifetime cost per mile of an electric vehicle is so much lower than gasoline and especially diesel, that a lot of fleets are looking hard and saying, you know what? No, for the truck that goes from San Francisco to New Orleans, can't do electric right now. But all of our local fleets, think a utility truck or something. All of those, they know how long they drive. The F-150 electric is perfect there, and Ford has been swamped with demand.
Oh, yeah. We're going 45 miles in a day. There's so much excess capacity in that battery.
Yeah.
You know, and that energy cost versus gas in that scenario are a lot lower. But it must be said that if you want to buy the big battery pack in this F-150, it's really expensive. It's like another 10 grand. Mm. We had one here to test, and it was $94,000. And if I'm going
to
spend $94,000...
about the price of a King Ranch, right?
Yeah, but the King Ranch doesn't have that play school interior, you know, that's like, you know, off-gassing. And it's the interior on these vehicles is like not a $94,000 interior. And, you know, I think Ford interiors are a real weak point. And I would be pissed if I spent 94 grand on an F-150 and I had that, you know, like Lego style interior that they got going there.
I'm curious to see over time the mix of truck buyers who buy it for the cool points, the advanced technology, you know, first electric truck in their subdivision, that kind of thing, and how many expect luxury commensurate with the price point in a gasoline car. Tesla was able to do it. Ford arguably may be able to translate that into the truck world too. We'll see.
Yeah, there's a lot of we'll sees, and we'll see what the second buyer set is for that, if they continue to really go gangbusters or if there's just a lot of excitement about it. But, you know, the interesting thing about EVs is when you drive a lot of them back to back, you sort of get the feeling that the ones you're driving are essentially obsolete because the next generation of the vehicle that you're driving is going to have more range. It's going to charge more quickly. So you're still on the sort of sharp part of the curve with a lot of with EV tech.
I would agree with that. You know, the analogy is somewhere between a conventional automobile and a phone. Think how often we replace our phones. But it is my hope that some of that advance comes if and when the car industry stabilizes after the shortages resolve, and we've been saying this for 3 years now, that some of that advance will be used to bring the price down. So that, in fact, instead of sort of a, $50,000 average or something for an EV, it might be $35,000. And certainly GM has aspirations toward that. We'll see when and how it happens.
Before we get to the GM product, I want to talk about another vehicle that I found super great, super interesting, and another sort of under the radar EV, if you will.
That would be the BMW i4 electric sedan. Available in two single motor rear wheel drive trims, the eDrive 35 and the eDrive 40, and one dual motor all wheel drive trim, my favorite i4, the M50. That's when we come back.
I've interviewed many successful people over the years, and one thing I find fascinating is many of them don't consider themselves business savvy. Take the owners of Tight Knit Brewing. They turned to Chase for Business for everything from banking and payment acceptance to credit cards, and do all of it in one place with the Chase mobile app. And that's helped these brew-loving friends turn a passion into a business. Learn more at chaseforbusiness.com. Make more of what's yours. Chase mobile app is available for select mobile devices. Message and data rates may apply. JP Morgan Chase Bank, N.A., member FDIC.
The most innovative companies are going further with T-Mobile for Business. The PGA of America is helping lower scores and elevate fan experiences with AI coaching tools and 5G connected cameras. AAA is getting more drivers back on the road fast with location telematics. And the Las Vegas Grand Prix is powering race day operations with 5G connectivity, giving fans an experience at the speed they deserve. This is accelerating innovation with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
The BMW i4 exists within the body of the BMW 4 Series Grand Coupe. So it looks just like a sort of normal four-door coupe, whatever that means, that BMW makes. But this thing is proof that all the great engineers of BMW have been transferred to their electric vehicles. Because this thing is, it rides better than an M3. It's quicker than an M3 in the M40 trim. And it gets decent range. And this car, I think, is so well executed and so great. It makes me like BMWs again. Huh. What's your take on the i4?
Historically, BMW is interesting because their first EV was this massively complicated, highly engineered, extremely efficient car that Americans never really wanted to buy, which is a small hatchback.
Called the i3.
The i3, based on the bet the batteries were going to stay expensive forever. That turned out to be absolutely not true. BMW in 2016 totally corrected and said, right, no more specialized cars. We're just going to make it as a powertrain. It may have a battery, but otherwise it's totally, completely, absolutely just like your gasoline car. Other makers from other places don't do that so much necessarily. I like the i4. For whatever reason, I found it much more convincing as an EV in its higher end two-motor trim, the 50, rather than the 40. Maybe it's because I've driven so many EVs. The 40 didn't feel significantly better than a bunch of sort of mid-range EVs to me, but the 50 was clearly the BMW.
You mentioned single motor versus dual motor. If you want to make an EV all-wheel drive, you just put a motor on an axle.
Right.
So these i4s are rear-wheel drive, rear-motored vehicles in their kind of entry-level forms, the 35 and the 40. And then you make it all-wheel drive by putting another motor on the front axle.
Absolutely.
Kind of convenient.
And it actually, one piece of trivia, which I'll keep to one sentence, is there's an EV coming out that has a front-wheel drive version, a rear-wheel drive version, and an all-wheel drive version. You can put the motor at either or both ends. And there are reasons for doing each of those things. EVs are interesting because people are rearranging the shape of the car and taking advantage of the smaller powertrain with a battery under the cabin, or some of them are. BMW is not. BMW has the exact same proportions as the gasoline car. But I like the i4. The German approach to EVs has been interesting because they were really late to the game. So were the Americans, but there were some expeditions on the American side, with the exception of Tesla. But that's its own show, if not its own series.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But no, it's a great driver. It does what a BMW should do and has the benefit of being really quiet, silky smooth, just all the things that you want a luxury car to do. Low noise, very, very quick acceleration. You know, luxury and performance are sort of intertwined now in the public mind, I think the buying mind. And the i4 does that really, really well.
Agreed.
Yeah. You know, you also raised a good point about the package itself. Like, you don't have big engine up front with a transmission attached to it. The battery, the energy storage is really in the floor and situated between the axles. So you have this really nice low center of gravity height that's great physically for the car. It helps it handle really, really well. So the sort of packaging scenario, the envelope of the car, even though it might be the same, is really, really different underneath. And that allows certain manufacturers to really play with that, because if all your energy storage is in the floor and you have these two motors on the axles, you can change the interior dimensions of the vehicle. You can play with the space and the proportion of the thing. And the next vehicle I want to talk about, I think, does that really, really well.
I'm talking about the Hyundai Ioniq 5, and there are three ways to get it. Single motor rear drive format, two motor all-wheel drive trim, or with the long range single motor setup, good for more than 300 miles on a full charge.
Now, if you look at it in pictures, it looks like it's the size of a VW Golf. And I think vehicles that are really, really well proportioned look smaller in photos than they do in real life. And conversely, vehicles with bad proportions, bad stylistic proportions, look bigger in photos than they do in real life. So this Hyundai Ioniq 5, this thing has a wheelbase that's larger than the Palisade three-row SUV. It looks like a small compact, but it's really, really interestingly packaged, and it's styled in a really, really cool way. It sort of looks like, if you know the Lancia Delta Integrale hatchback from Yore, it looks like a Minecraft version of that. It's sort of like a, it was sort of the future we were promised in the 80s, you know, very, very cool sort of 8-bit styling, really, really tremendous road presence. When you see this thing on the road, you're like, what the hell is that? And it's big inside and it's quick and it's got that 800 volt charging architecture that we talked about earlier. This thing to me is just such a home run all the way around, even if the interior, in keeping with the 80s theme, looks like one of those cubicle farms, you know.
I don't think the interior is quite that bad, but you drive a lot more high-end cars than I do.
It's got that, like, you know, that grayish fabric, and it just sort of looks like you're working for IBM.
Well, there is this trope that, oh, you're driving an electric car, it has no emissions, so you have to use all sustainable materials. And a lot of vehicles, regardless of electric or gasoline, do actually use sustainable materials.
Gotcha. Now, you hear a lot of EV skeptics say, well, yeah, the cars themselves are zero emissions, but the round trip on the energy is pretty dirty, because in this country, 2/3 of our electricity is produced from coal or natural gas. So if you're driving an EV, you're driving a coal or natural gas powered car 2/3 of the time.
We call this the coal tailpipe argument. It is categorically false, and here's why. In the US, with the latest data from the Department of Energy, coal is only 20% of our generation mix, and it is being replaced by a mix of renewables or far, far, far more efficient and lower carbon natural gas generation. Even on the dirtiest grid in North America, an electric car has the carbon footprint of a 40-mile-per-gallon passenger car. And you will notice that we sell very few of those these days.
Yeah, that's true. But that's not exactly apples to apples, because the well-to-wheel on an EV includes the mining energy, which is significant and
done,
dirty.
Done properly, those wells-to-wheels comparisons include not only the energy, but also the manufacturing burden of the car. So an EV definitely has more what they call embedded carbon to build it, but that is fairly quickly offset, depending on the vehicle, how big its battery is, and so forth. It's from 15 to 40,000 miles where you cross. And because it's using so much less energy per mile, everything after that is gravy.
And so we're drawing the dirtiness down.
Yeah, exactly. So no question that battery electric cars have more carbon embedded. But as the grids that they're charging on decarbonize, an electric car gets cleaner per mile. And you can't say that about gasoline. Grids all over the world are moving to more renewables. They're swapping out coal for natural gas. And so electric cars over their lifetime get continually cleaner. But what I will say is, I think Hyundai has hit a good balance between completely duplicating a conventional interior set of controls and going off on the far end, as Tesla has done with the Model 3 and Model Y, and some of the other startups have, where, in fact, to do very simple, basic, quick things, you have to go into menus and screens and sort of expand or drop down or find an option, which I think is not only annoying and idiotic, but dangerous. I think Hyundai hit the right balance in terms of it's got knobs for the thing you expect knobs for. My grumble about the Rivian is that you can't adjust the air vents without going
unless
into the menu,
go in the menu,
which I just,
it's ridiculous,
idiotic. So you can adjust the air vents on the Hyundai and so on, but it has a lot of the features that you will use less, or you will need to find in a decent menu structure, to my way of thinking.
Yeah, it does have great user interface, and Hyundai Kia Genesis products. If you want to get to the map, there's a button for the map. Yes. If you want to get to the radio, there's a button for the radio. There's a volume knob. There's a seek button. And one of the coolest adaptations from a conventional internal combustion car to the IONIQ 5 are the so-called shift paddles on the steering wheel. Now, in the IONIQ 5, they don't control any gear set, but what they do is increase or decrease the amount of regenerative braking.
And there's a term maybe we want to define.
Let's sidebar for a second. What exactly is regenerative braking, John?
in a conventional gasoline car, when you lift off the accelerator, these days, to improve fuel economy, you pretty much glide. But there is drag, and so over time you slow down. With the engine on, you're still burning gasoline. You're still essentially wasting energy even as you slow down. And then when you hit the brakes, more wasted energy because generated by heat. In an electric car, the bulk of the braking in day-to-day driving is done by instantaneously turning an electric motor into a generator that puts energy back into the battery. And there are various ways to tune the generation. And if you set what we call regenerative braking at a higher level, the car slows faster and puts more energy back into the battery. The average is about 30% of the energy you use to move the car comes back in through regenerative braking. People have different preferences on how their EV drives. Some want it to drive just like a conventional automatic car, lift off and it just rolls. Others, and often more experienced EV drivers, like a higher degree of regeneration up to what we call one pedal driving, which means you mostly don't even touch the brake pedal. It's one of those things that you got to do it to understand.
Yeah, and it takes a little skill, but once you master it, I think you don't want to go back to moving your foot between the accelerator and a brake pedal. And also, I think it's a boon to aggressive driving because it slows you down sort of automatically, very quickly for a turn before you turn. And I find that I use the highest regenerative setting on those paddles almost exclusively. I don't want to be sailing around and coasting around. I want to accelerate and I want to stop and never the twain shall meet.
As do I. I consider one pedal driving to be a benefit once you learn it.
And one of the great ironies, I think, about this Ioniq 5 is it's probably the funkiest looking, but it's sort of the most conventional driving.
Yes.
And, you know, it really is satisfying and it's terrific.
When we come back, another entry from Detroit.
I've interviewed many successful people over the years, and one thing I find fascinating is many of them don't consider themselves business savvy. Take the owners of Tight Knit Brewing. They turned to Chase for Business for everything from banking and payment acceptance to credit cards and do all of it in one place with the Chase mobile app. And that's helped these brew-loving friends turn a passion into a business. Learn more at chaseforbusiness.com. Make more of what's yours. Chase mobile app is available for select mobile devices. Message and data rates may apply. JP Morgan Chase Bank, N.A., member FDIC.
The most innovative companies are going further with T-Mobile for Business. The PGA of America is helping lower scores and elevate fan experiences with AI coaching tools and 5G-connected cameras. AAA is getting more drivers back on the road fast with location telematics. And the Las Vegas Grand Prix is powering race day operations with 5G connectivity, giving fans an experience at the speed they deserve. This is accelerating innovation with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at tmobile.com/now.
I want to move on now to the last vehicle in our set, and that is the Cadillac Lyriq.
The Lyriq is Cadillac's first all-electric vehicle, but certainly not its last. On the heels of the Lyriq, Caddy just announced its flagship, a customizable $300,000 EV called the Celestiq.
The thing that I love about the Lyriq is it looks like a Barcelona chair turned into a car. It is so amazingly beautiful. When you see them on the road, maybe not in a photo, but when you see it from the chair height of another car, you see these things on the road. They're just endlessly fascinating. And I think they're going to look good for a very, very long time. You know, they are pretty outre in terms of their styling, but they also seem pretty timeless too. And I think an EV like that, that is very highly styled, timelessly styled, but also isn't going to set any land speed records. It's not super fast. It's just quiet, luxurious, beautiful, great to be in, and really kind of affordable. I mean, that's like the Cadillac sweet spot. That's what that brand should be. And I think the Lyric is a great execution, a great representation of what a modern Cadillac could and should be. What's your take on the Lyric?
The Lyric is interesting. I'm going to defer my decision on the styling for a couple of decades. And here's why. I'm now pretty much convinced that the Tesla Model S is going to be one of the defining designs, like the Citroen DS or, you know, those handful.
Even though it's totally boring?
I would say classic.
Okay.
You can say boring. Because it set the mold. People thought it was a Jaguar. Before people knew what a Tesla was, everybody said, essentially, God, that's beautiful. That's a Jaguar. And
the Model S, I'm going to let you finish, but the Model S to me always looked like one of those cars that they would have in like a Chevron ad. That was like an amalgamation of different cars that it didn't have like a recognizable grill, but you could see, oh, maybe they're trying to make it look like a Benz or a Jag or something. It was just like a mishmash of a bunch of styling cues that, yeah, it's set a little bit lower, but like, come on, man. Go for it a little bit.
Mm. Well, I think I understand why it trended toward the classic, because Tesla did the traditional way of launching new technology at the top of the market, and they made a car that was desirable and also had electric power, or put more cynically, desirable despite being electric. But
desirable was the most important
thing.
Yes. Quick and desirable.
Yeah.
Right.
Tesla built the Model S, Nissan built the Leaf. Which one do you want to own?
Yeah.
But the Lyric, I want to wait and see. I've heard really mixed reviews on its styling. Many people, I think yourself, stunned by it, and others really dislike the back end. The front, no one seems to have a trouble with. The back end, that sort of slightly curved hatch. Remember the first Art and Science Cadillacs?
Mm-hmm.
2003, 2004. I thought that was a stunning design at the time. It was blocky. It was aggressive. It was the new direction for Cadillac. I saw one recently and I thought, God, that looks old and dated.
Right.
And so I want to see if that happens with the Lyric.
And I think great styling needs to lead the market a little bit. Former BMW designer, very controversial, Chris Bangle. He said, our cars are going to be on the road for 30, 40 years. They need to look good in 30 and 40 years, and they can't be too trendy. And I think that the Lyric just absolutely hits that long-term style. I think it's going to age very, very well. And I think, you know, it drives like an SUV should. It's quiet. It's easy. It doesn't snap your neck back, but you know, come on.
It's comfortable and soothing. It doesn't necessarily have all those EV advantages, but GM has really good regen. I didn't have to think twice about how the Lyric would behave getting into it fresh. Here's my question though. You and I and this continent are not who matters as to whether or not that car is a success. Cadillac has sold more vehicles in China for 5 years now. The gap is growing. And the Celestiq, their $300,000 super low production luxury car, that's the halo for over there. It doesn't matter whether Americans want it or not.
Yeah, agreed. The dual motor Lyric, it is coming. And yes, there is that connection between performance and luxury that we've come to expect, that the, you know, the European cars have taught us to expect, like the BMWs and Mercedes AMGs. And I believe the Cadillac has done certain cars that we're going to talk about also in this series that beat the Germans at their own game. But here, like, this one is unapologetically American, and I sort of love it for that.
And now, John and I will rank all four cars to pick our top choice.
I would put the Lyric last on our list of best EVs, most interesting EVs of the year. Because, yeah, at the end of the day, it's an SUV that gets pretty good range. It's pretty comfortable. There's kind of a lot of those. The styling sets it apart, but not as interesting to me as the F-150 or the BMW or the Ioniq. So that's my fourth pick. I don't know if you agree or not.
I would actually put the BMW in fourth.
Okay.
Because given how far BMW took the i3, some of the interesting facets of that, the i4 feels to me like an overcorrection. Mm. They got scared. It drives beautifully. It is a predictable BMW. Where's the specialness of being an EV besides accelerated response, quietness, and weight distribution?
The significance to me of the BMW i4 is that they were able to impart the BMW values and traits onto an EV and actually exceed some of those other gas-powered cars. And to me, that's what's significant about it, is that BMW offers its buyers the choice. You can get this with a gas motor. You can get it with an EV. And I think ultimately that's where we're going to be. Like, you know, the electric motors might replace like the V6 version. And I kind of like that world where we've got a bunch of different takes on sort of the same overall envelope, the same styling statement, the same aggressive sports sedan kind of vibe. And so I'm going Lyric 4.
All right.
BMW i4 in the third spot, right. Even though I really...
I'd swap the Lyric into 3.
Okay. But let's talk about runner-up in this bracket. Mm-hmm. For me, it's the F-150.
I can make a convincing case for either the Ioniq or the F-150. I think the Ioniq is more significant globally, and I think its technology is more advanced, and it shows how deadly serious Hyundai, Kia are about electric cars, about setting themselves up for the long run in EVs and aggressively ramping up their production. They may well be the first global car company to introduce a 3-row battery electric 300-mile SUV, which thus far only Tesla has done. And, you know, we'll see where GM comes in on that. But the F-150 to me, because I'm an American, is equally significant just because it was so unexpected. And quite frankly, I think it's so good at doing the truck things that buyers of that segment and that vehicle expect. I don't think anyone expected the F-150 to be quite as well thought through as I found it to be.
And I agree with all that. And I think it is such a huge gamble and so well played, so well executed, and a significant, significant entry, because they are going right for the heart of the market with a technology that people still haven't embraced. And let's be honest, even though, you know, EV sales have doubled during the pandemic, they're still only 6% of the market. So for Ford to push its chips in this way and make this huge bet, really, really impressive and significant.
But look at the demand. They expected to sell 40,000 of them a year, and they cut it off at 200,000 orders before a single one had been built and sold.
Yeah, I hear that. I don't know if that's the tsunami of initial demand and if that's going to continue. We'll see about that. The thing that keeps it in the number two spot for me is just the the price is so ridiculous, man. Like, to get, the Germans used to do this. They would charge like $10,000 for horsepower. You know, to get the big engine, you'd have to spend sometimes double the price of the car. And it was just, come on, man. Americans don't do that. Like, you check a box on your Chevy Nova and you get the big engine and it's $50. And to me, that seems totally un-American.
Oh, yeah. My granddad used to tell me about those days.
They predate me, but I still think that value is a really big part of the American vehicle equation. And the people who do value better than anybody else right now because they're vertically integrated, because they have such an eye toward the future, is Hyundai Kia Genesis. And look, for the price of the average car, the transaction price for the average car now is 48 grand.
Yep.
And it's inflated because of, you know, part shortages and supply chain issues. But for around that price, for 50 grand, you can get this incredibly stylish, well-realized, state-of-the-art charging infrastructure. Great to drive, great to be in, really, really huge, interesting package. You can get really a concept car for the road, if I'm going to say it, in the Ioniq 5 for 50 grand. And to me, that's just like, bring it on.
I take your price argument. On the other hand, you can get a perfectly serviceable F-150 Lightning for that same 60 grand. It won't be the top trim. And yeah, they just jacked the base price. So I think that has some headway yet. But I do take your price argument. I think in the end, I go for the Ioniq for two reasons. One sort of industry analysis and one purely selfish. The industry analysis is that that's a globally important car. They are selling them in all the major markets. They're selling them here. They're selling them in Europe. They're selling them in Asia. And it has been well-reviewed, accepted, all of those places. So that makes it more significant than the F-150 versus, say, the Mach-E, which is, in fact, being sold in other markets. The other, frankly, is that I and we would prefer to drive an Ioniq 5 than an F-150.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that may or may not be at all relevant to the people who are listening.
Totally.
I mean, but, I would be happy to own an Ioniq 5. I'm really don't see any need to drive an F-150 Lightning.
It's overkill, man. It is. I mean, for the 3 days a year that you're going to buy a huge TV for the Super Bowl or take some wood around. I mean, you don't need an F-150. You don't need a pickup truck. They're gargantuan. And that's one of the kind of hilarious things about the F-150 to me is how performatively oversized it is. Like, oh, yeah, it's a big old truck, but it's really good for the environment. So can you have your cake and eat it too? Maybe. So we go Lyriq, BMW, F-150. Ioniq 5 makes it to the next round.
Here we are in the Ioniq 5 to give you a sense of what it's like to drive.
Really doesn't have a ton of grip, but it hustles. It really moves. Like all EVs, you know, the acceleration is just instantaneous. But the brakes are decent. Even if they're a little, they're not maybe aggressive enough. You have to be intentional about your braking in this vehicle. One of the great and really intuitive things about this Ioniq 5 is you can adjust the level of regenerative braking via little paddles mounted to the steering wheel. You know, in a normal internal combustion vehicle, those might be paddle shifters that control the transmission. Here, it adjusts how much the car automatically slows down based on regenerative rather than friction braking in the system. And that is one of the great advantages of EVs to drive with one pedal. You know, it's great for lazy people. You can just lift off the throttle and come to a complete stop. You don't have to go through the anguish and agony of moving your right foot from the gas pedal to the brake pedal. It does it for you. Okay, let's accelerate quickly. No sound. I started with a range of 185 miles, ending with a range of 161 miles, but I did not go 24 miles. I only went about 15. So a high degree of inaccuracy from the projection in the computer, but I was also driving like a complete maniac and sapping as much juice as humanly possible. But I was also using full regenerative braking
And here I am at a complete stop using the intelligent pedal setting on the regen.
Next time on Car Show, the best SUVs of the year with Ezra Dyer. Car Show is written and hosted by me, Eddie Alterman. It's produced by Emily Rostek and Jacob Smith. Our editor is Karen Shakurji. Original music and mastering by Ben Tolliday. Our executive producer is Mia Lobel. Our show art was designed by Sean Carney and airbrushed by Greg Lefevre. Our patron saints, as always, are Lital Malad and Justine Lang. Car Show is a production of Pushkin Industries. If you love this show and others from Pushkin Industries, consider subscribing to Pushkin Plus. Pushkin Plus is a podcast subscription that offers bonus content and uninterrupted listening for just $4.99 a month. Look for Pushkin Plus on Apple Podcast subscriptions. To find more Pushkin podcasts, listen on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.